Hi, I'm Adrian. And right this moment, there are tens of thousands of Black entrepreneurs around the world creating amazing startups that you've never heard about. For some reason, the mainstream media doesn't cover Black entrepreneurs as much as it should. But on this show, we find these amazing founders. We sit down with them. We figure out how they got their ideas launched, what their struggles were, what they're afraid of, what drives them. My hope is that you have enough firepower from listening to this show to go out there and start your own business. Or if you're working on something, continue plowing through it. Let's have an amazing time together. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Brittany.
Good, how are you?
Not too bad. How's everything going over there at Mogul Millennial?
It's going good.
Yeah?
It's going good. Thanks for asking.
So the first thing that happens when I sign into LinkedIn now is for some reason, the LinkedIn algorithm has decided that I want to see all the posts from Brittany Hunter and Mogul Millennial article. which I love because, you know, it just reminds me, hey, every day, hey, there's a new article out. Go get it.
Yeah.
And I definitely enjoy reading the articles. I think that you cover a wide range of topics that focus on, you know, the Black millennial entrepreneur's journey. But, you know, you started Mogul Millennial a little over 2.5 years ago, I believe. Mm-hmm. And I think the first question I would have to ask is, you know, why did you feel like there was a need for sort of a niche media outlet like this?
Yeah. So, a little bit before I launched Mogul Millennial, I was having like different conversations with like friends. So maybe friends I went to college with. I was talking to like different colleagues that looked like me and they had like the same type of experiences. And then some of the things that I found out in these conversations is that, you know, from the outside looking in, they had great paying jobs. They had really impressive roles at their, in corporate. They were highly educated, so they had more than one degree. But in some of them, they even had like profitable, like small businesses or side hustles. But like in all these conversations that I had, I realized that we all had the same internal feeling of being stuck, right? And so we didn't really feel like we knew what to do, like what to do next. So yes, we were doing good in corporate. We were creating and innovating different businesses and products, but we kind of felt like we hit a glass ceiling and we didn't really feel like we had a space to go to get that type of advice on how to take that next step in our careers and businesses. And so from there, I knew that, you know, targeted resources and advice for our demographic was missing in the content space. And so I took, you know, those type of conversations and those thoughts that I had on that matter. I actually took it through LinkedIn. So it's funny that you say that. And then I started intentionally creating what people like to call smart content, but specifically for our demographic. And what I found was that it wasn't something that we needed some type of targeted resource to help us grow. There were, you know, thousands of other people that fit our demographic that felt the same. And so, yeah, that was kind of like the inspiration behind Mogul Millennial. And so from LinkedIn, I decided to take the conversation from LinkedIn and build a platform specifically for us.
Well, I would go ahead and say that, you know, a lot of the articles, I would sort of co-sign what you just said there with regards to, you know, being in corporate, being a Black millennial professional, I would say, being in corporate, you definitely have good jobs and there is a feeling of being stuck, that much I will admit. So you were definitely spot on with that one. So you have a background in communications and media studies. So this is kind of like you're stepping into a playing field that you know very well, right? You've been working in the media industry for quite a while now. But starting a startup is definitely not easy. And you did, you know, what most would call the crossing over about, I believe, 6 or 7 months ago, and you went full time on your startup. Mm-hmm. How's that going so far?
Yeah. So just to clarify, my background, like more of my full time work background is actually in like operations and management and And I, and like I also had like different roles, like within my role as a general manager, like hiring people and onboarding and team development and things like that. It wasn't until I started working in my last company that I started doing like freelance writing and kind of dabbing in like the journalism field. I studied communications and media studies in school, but I didn't start actually working in that field. So this is actually, to me, my first full-time role per se, in the media field. But as far as, what was your question? I think you asked how's it being, I guess, being a full-time founder. Was that your question?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. So one thing that I did before I decided to quit my last role, everything was planned. I think, honestly, looking back, I probably could have planned it a little bit better, but, intentionally took a certain role so that way I could save more money. And I stayed up, I was really laser focused on saving, because I knew that once I decided to launch my company, the last thing I wanted to do was be worried about like how bills are going to get paid, right? I wanted to be more so focused on like just growing the business, growing our reach and things like that. And so since then, I've been a full-time founder since January 11th of this year. And it's definitely been hard work. So when I said I wish I would have prepared a little bit better, I think I definitely could have, number one, saved more money, because you don't realize how quickly, money leaves after a while. But would have saved more money. And I think too, in the beginning, it's been a little bit difficult because, certain like things that I've been wanting to do with the business, I would have been able to probably get started on those a lot sooner. So yeah, I wish I would have saved more money. There's different things in the business that I've actually had to like postpone or things like that because of money and just trying to make the best financial decisions for Mogul Millennial. And then, I think it's been, so far this past year, my journey has been a little bit harder than I think it could have been, because as a media company, what you need mostly and what investors or potential partners care about is, okay, well, if we partner with you or if we give you money, how, what does your reach look like? What is your impact? Mm-hmm. And I think in the beginning, it was more so like in the beginning, once I quit my job, I was more so focused on like, really just getting more money for the business. So I was less focused on, in some kind of way, and I didn't even realize it, but like growing the business and growing the user base, and more focused on, okay, well, let me pitch this investor. And so I think I spent too much time doing that. And so for the past few months after realizing that, I've been now back just super laser focused on just growing our business, extending our reach, trying to connect with as many professional Black millennials as possible. And then I feel like once we get to a point where we're really exceeding at that, then if the investment route is something that we should do happens, and then it'll come.
Right. So it sounds to me like your focus is, I'm just going to build a profitable business that works. And then, we can worry about the investment, once we've got that core part of the business sorted.
Yeah, exactly. So more so just building that revenue and then building our user base.
So, if you tell someone, hey, I run a media company that focuses on Black millennial entrepreneurs and corporate bosses, as you state, some people might say, that sounds like, are there a lot of people like that? What kind of market size are we talking about? What's the potential reach here, with regards to how many readers you can build up over time?
Yeah. So if you look at the buying power for just Black Americans, period, it's over 1.2 trillion. And even outside of that number, Black millennials make up a good portion of that. And so when I think about like the target market that I'm going after in particular, we have what companies want. We are highly educated. We drive the culture. We're tech savvy. We have the jobs. We have the businesses. And so we have the funds to support different products and services. And so when I've talked with different investors, they actually have agreed, and people, investors that don't look like me at all and don't have the same cultural experiences, they agree that our target market is likely a highly sought after market that's untapped that people should be going after. So if you look at that, also, if you look at like even if you break down the numbers of like the buying power and you look at what Black millennials in particular are spending their money on, a good portion of that is going to educational services and it's going to professional development products and services. And so Mogul Millennial essentially, you know, outside of if you look past the, you know, just from the outer appearance of our website, if you just see blog content, if you look at internally what's inside that blog content, it's exactly what our target market are interested in using their monies on, which is, you know, how to grow, how to elevate in my career, or how to, you know, if I'm going back to school, how can I make the most out of it and you know, and build the type of life I want.
So running a media company, from what I understand from the outside looking in, seems like there's a lot of moving parts. You know, you definitely have to have your content ready to go every day. Do you have any co-founders? Do you have a core team? How are you doing this? Because initially I thought it was just you just writing all these articles and I was just blown away. You know, how are you able to do that so far?
Yeah. So for the very first year, it was just me. A year before I left my last company, I knew that I would need help. And so one of the things that I did, I started posting on LinkedIn and on different social networks and also through our weekly newsletter that we were looking for certain members of our team. So right now we have a team of over 45 content creators and they create like on a rolling basis different articles. So whether that's a feature article or more of a like a op-ed piece or a listicle, they, you know, I'm ever so grateful they contribute different articles, and we have something new that we can publish every single day to Mogul Millennial. And then outside of that, we have a very small social media team that helps promote those amazing articles that the content creators create. And then there's one person on the newsletter team, and then I have a lead engineer that's responsible for, you know, basically help me maintain the site. And I've been having actually the lead engineer since I created Mogul Millennial. He's a close friend and he's been really helpful with, like, you know, making sure that our website is up and if there's any updates that's needed, he does that. And then we're also we've been working on a redesign for Mogul Millennial that I'm hoping that we can release really soon. So he's also working on it. And that, by the way, I'm a solo founder. I'm the only founder.
Well, yeah, that was the next thing I was about to ask. You know, any co-founders, solo founder, seems like definitely a daunting task. One of the things that I would definitely like to know is that what are some of the early challenges of getting started? I mean, right now you have 45 people, you know, writing content for you. You have a core team that you manage as well. And obviously you don't just go from, you know, zero to all that. You know, where do you actually get started and what are some of the challenges with getting the media company up and running?
I think as far as a media company and some of the challenges that I face specifically because I have a media company is I think in the very early days, I was more so creating the type of content that I felt like the world needed instead of really going in and looking at our data to see what people were responding to. So I think that was a challenge that I experienced. And now I'm like all in our analytics and our data literally every single day, all day, to see what's performing and what's not performing, or even on through like each social network, what content is performing the best on those social networks. So as we are promoting the articles, we, you know, we schedule it based off of which social network prefers certain type of content. And so I think that was a huge challenge. And then secondly, in the beginning, you know, I was trying to do everything myself. And I think that was like another thing that I had to get over. And once I got over it, it's actually, I think, what really helped us grow to the point that we're at now, because we have a variety of opinions and a variety of experiences that help create really great content.
Okay, that's quite amazing. You know, I think that once you get your company up and running like you have, well, you need funds to keep it going. You mentioned earlier that you were able to save up to get you started. Are you currently looking for funding right now? You know, what's that process? You know, what does that process look like for you right now? And how far have you been able to get with that?
Not at the moment, no. That was something that I was more so interested like earlier this year, but not now at this moment, no. I did fill out an application a couple of months ago for an accelerator program that I had an interview for. And so if that works out, then I'll do that. But at this current moment, for like the last month or so, that's not something that I'm like really focused on right now.
Okay, so a lot of times, you know, you hear that with regards to Black founders, only 1% of founders actually do get funded, actually less than that, matter of fact, actually smaller than 1%. And it's definitely a challenge where a lot of great companies with good market share, good products, good services, don't ever get the funding they need, and eventually they die out. Is there a version of Mogul Millennial that you can bootstrap all the way to success?
I'm trying to think something that's similar to Mogul Millennial, or that's just in the media space that I know of that has been completely bootstrapped. I honestly don't know of any companies that have been able to completely bootstrap their way to, you know, to that billion-dollar company. I know there are several different media companies that I've read about that are not necessarily like Mogul Millennial in regards to our demographic and our content type. But there are several companies out there that have maybe reached that million, that first $1 million without venture funding or without funding from angel investors. So I know it's definitely possible. But when I know I did an interview with Dave, I'm probably going to butcher his last name, but I think it's Savant. He's one of the co-founders of Squire, which is Black-owned. Black founded companies to Black founders, and they've raised, I think, a total of $13 million. I may be wrong on that, so just fact check me. But they, when I interviewed him a couple of months ago for Mogul Millennial, one thing that he told me is that he felt that venture capital was like a necessary evil. And so while, yes, you can definitely bootstrap your way to like $1 million or a couple of million or what have you, I don't want to say that it's impossible, but one thing that I learned from Dave is that, you know, being a startup, the idea is that you need to like grow and move fast. And so that type of startup capital is what can really help you grow. However, for me, I think I have a really unique situation that I'm in because of the demographic that I'm, you know, that I target. Although I have had different investors say that they do believe that it's an untapped market and that it's an important market. However, they haven't been writing any checks. And so I think because of that, I need to show other areas of our business in terms of growth before they really, really see the value in it. And so, so I think if you are a media company and you are trying to target a really like niche market, I think first you should be focused on like user growth, and then try to focus on user growth, try to grow as fast as possible and get a really impressive amount of daily unique visitors or members, or however you calculate users on your site or on your app. And then from there, if you do that really quickly, then try to get funding in some sort. And then also, I think a lot of times people forget about things like pitch competitions. Like I have a friend that has an ed tech company, and he won over $150,000 in pitch competitions. And to me, not like money that's not, equity free. That's the best type of money. And so if you can do that in the beginning to like, you know, help, you know, grow your company in terms of like from a financial way, then, you know, there's tons of pitch competitions out here that I see all the time that are looking to give away money.
So you've got the startup now. It's running. You know, you definitely have you're onto something with regards to an untapped market. It looks to me like you're the first mover with regards to media content that's directly targeted to Black millennials and Black millennial entrepreneurs and professionals. You know, what are you worried about? You know, what's the biggest threat for you right now?
Let me think. I think, you know, it would be naive to say that, you know, if Mogul Millennial went out and raised a huge round and started getting a lot of press, that, you know, bigger companies that are in, maybe they're not even currently focused on Black millennials or Black people, period, that they wouldn't, you know, start a segment or a sister brand of their current media company and start targeting our demographic. So I think it'll be naive to say that that's not something to be worried about. However, I felt like In this short period of time, we have quickly like grown a really loyal audience and readership. And so I think that is what keeps me motivated and inspired and honestly not as concerned with other companies and other people and what they're doing. And then also when I look at like myself and every content creator that we have on the team, you know, we are our target market. And so like literally there's different, I have some amazing people that write for Mocha Millennial. They may have their own startup as well. They are, you know, they work in corporate and they have different like high level positions. And so, you know, I feel like no one can really create content for our demographic as good as we can because we know exactly what we want and need.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely agree with that. So you definitely got that authenticity down, which is something that you definitely can't replicate at all. So looking back, you know, when you first started, if you could go back right now and talk to, you know, Brittany Hunter, you know, 2 years ago when you first started, you know, is there anything that you would sort of advise that version of yourself to have started off with instead?
Yeah, I think I think one thing that I would do early on is to, number one, I would encourage like that younger version of myself 2 years ago to not be afraid to ask for help. And I think I would have tapped in. I have several people in my network already that I think would have been great for Mocha Millennial in those early days. And so I think that most importantly, I would have done that. And then I think also just, you know, I think I would have encouraged myself to be just more unapologetic. And so not being afraid or, you know, intimidated to think that, you know, we were too young or too early to connect or have partnerships with certain companies or certain people. And so I think now I believe the total opposite now. And so I'm no longer afraid to approach people or to reach out to different companies for potential partnerships. But I think I wish that's something that I would have been more confident to do in the beginning.
So how did you gain that confidence? I mean, I know that, you know, a lot of potential aspiring founders, especially Black founders out there, they have good ideas. I mean, I talk to a lot of people who have product ideas, physical product ideas, app ideas. And often I get the sense that people are not necessarily too confident with mm-hmm. with their ideas. How do you move from that phase, you know, for someone else out there who is just starting out, how do you move from that phase to then, you know, moving with some conviction, like, hey, I know what I'm doing. You know, I might not have all the tools and all the resources or even all the knowledge right now, but I'm gonna go after this thing because I know that there's something here. You know, how do you move from that point onto, you know, getting that confidence?
I think for me, one thing that I did, I sat down and I realized, okay, well, if I'm going to do this full time, and this is when I was preparing to go full time, if I'm going to do it full time, I need to, number one, ask myself and give a, like, you know, really ask myself and be honest, do you believe in what you're building? And so I told, you know, after those conversations with myself and those deep thoughts, I realized that, you know, I absolutely did believe what I was building. And I knew that there was a need for it. I knew that it was something that I wish that I would have had coming out of college. Or honestly, you know, I knew that if I would have stopped building Mocha Millennial, I would have been searching for something like Mocha Millennial. And again, it doesn't exist. We're the only ones out here that's creating smart content specifically for our demographic. And so I think I realized that, you know, Mocha Millennial was needed, and I became even more in love with our whole mission and the whole vision behind our startup. And then number two, I think one other thing that I started doing, I stopped, I'm not going to want to say I stopped paying attention to the different data and the stats that's out there, because, you know, it'll be naive to do so because it definitely exists. There's definitely facts to, you know, the stats in regards to, you know, how many businesses fail each year or how much money is given to like Black people, and then narrowing it down to like Black female founders. I think it'll be naive to say that, you know, I'm not gonna like read it or pay attention to it. But at the same time, I've decided to not let that impact the way that I move. And so while yes, those stats exist, I have to think the exact opposite. And so it's an ongoing challenge. Every day I have to literally tell myself, okay, well, that is old news and I'm building new news. And so despite, you know, what has happened in the past or what is continuing to happen, I'm gonna succeed no matter what. And luckily, there are really great founders out here that exist that have built like billion-dollar companies or are on the road to building billion-dollar companies that are, you know, great examples of what hard work can do and not, you know, letting stats deter you from what you're building.
Right. So you mentioned that, you know, you mentioned a billion-dollar company a few times, and I have to ask, you know, what's the big vision with regards to how big do you think that Mogul Millennial can get? You know, we're looking at, you know, a $10 million company, a $100 million company, or be the next Vogue. You know, what sort of, you know, vision do you see right now in the next couple of years?
I think in regards to like reach and impact, we can be like another Vogue, another Forbes, but definitely not the same because our content strategy is totally different. Mm-hmm. But I think that Mogul Millennial can definitely be another billion-dollar company, can another be another unicorn in the startup space. So I think right now we just have to continue to like spread the word about it and just make sure that we are like I know with my team, I always tell them, like, just make sure that no matter what, we're creating pieces that are quality and that are action packed. And so as we read each article and review each article, if we believe that someone can't get anything out of the article, then we don't need to publish it. And so I think as long as we stay focused on that, we can continue to reach more people, reach more potential partnerships and, you know, reach the interests of investors. And we can definitely be a billion-dollar company.
Well, I personally think that Mogul Millennial can be, and, you know, in my opinion, it will be because, you know, the content and the authenticity and the articles and sort of the take on what millennial entrepreneurs, you know, professionals who are looking to make that leap need. I think you guys are definitely providing that. And I personally think that it's going to happen, just a matter of time. To backtrack a little bit, you know, to the start of things, or before the start, actually, when you started saving up to launch the company, what was that period like? And what sort of sacrifices did you have to make to be able to save up? Now, to save up for a startup, it's not like you're saving up for a car. I mean, you really need to put some money away because you know it's going to be valuable. You know, how does that process look for you? You know, what sacrifices did you make and how difficult or easy was that for you to do? You know, did you move back into mom's house or dad's house? You know, how, you know, what was your strategy with that?
Yeah. So, when my last, like the last company that I worked at, I was really blessed to be in the type of role that I was in and with the type of company that I was working with. And so, so my experience in operations and management was in the student housing industry. And so, I worked as an assistant general manager for a couple of years before I got promoted to a general manager. And so I used to run and operate different student housing properties at universities like the University of Texas at Dallas and then also the University of Houston. And so in those roles, I had the opportunity to live on site. And that was something that I always took advantage of because I felt like it was, you know, it was just a smart move. And so because I was living on site, I didn't have rent. So I've actually never paid rent in my life. Well, I did like for a year in college before I became an RA, but I've never paid rent. And so, you know, having that type of role, it can, you know, number one, you're able to like save easily if you have good spending habits. And so, but when I knew that I was going to quit my job to focus on Mogul Millennial, I've always had like great like saving habits. And so that wasn't an issue, but I did look at more at like what I was spending month to month. And I did like cut out certain things. And so, you know, maybe do I need Netflix and Hulu? No. Or if maybe I don't need it all throughout the year. Maybe I'm only going to watch it certain times. And so I looked at things that I was spending that really just didn't make sense or it wasn't a smart move. I looked at the amount that I was traveling. So I cut down on my traveling. So, you know, that's not, you know, so that meant like I wasn't going on as many girl trips or just going out of town as much as I was prior. And so, yeah, I definitely made a lot of sacrifices in regards to that. I wasn't going to like to Sunday fun day all the time because number one, I was getting way busier with building Mogul Millennial. Then number two, I knew that if I needed to like quit my job and use the money and have enough money to survive and sustain myself, you know, $20 on a carafe of mimosas, that adds up over time. And so, yeah, so I cut out just like the normal, you know, day-to-day or week-to-week things that like many of us partake in. And honestly, if people look at like pull an account statement, pull their account summary or what have you from their bank, they'll see that like a lot of things adds up, you know, lunch every day or lunch every, you know, a couple times a week, that'll add up. And so I literally like did exactly what I just said. I pulled my account summary, looked at like my spending habits, looked at how much I was saving and how frequently I was able to save a certain amount of money. And I cut back on a lot of that stuff. And so that helped tremendously for sure.
Sacrifices, you know, before you decide to launch a startup, it's definitely something that you need, obviously, to save money. But the sacrifices don't really end there, right? Once you become a founder, and in your case, a full-time founder, you know, the sacrifices continue on. You know, what sort of sacrifices do you find yourself making now, you know, versus, you know, in the past beforehand, you know, when you didn't have a company to run like this?
Oh, definitely a lot of the same. And so I'm very particular on like what I spend my money on. And so luckily being in the media space, a lot of times I can't go to some events for free, but I'm really particular on like how I spend money on like different products and services. And so even from like I don't spend money on things that I feel like I used to spend money on all the time, even from like, you know, from like our, like my outer appearance, I'm not spending money on hair and nails all the time. Cause I feel like that's just it's just not a smart way to spend your money. And so instead I've learned how to do different things for myself to cut back on costs. Similar to what I was saying, as far as travel, typically I take a birthday trip every year. I normally go on several trips throughout the year. I haven't been anywhere this whole year, like not at all. So you know, traveling, I feel like if it's not like uber important, I don't have to go. And so this year, to me, there hasn't been anything that was just like, you know, I have to go to that required like a plane trip or a hotel space or anything like that. And so cutting back on travel definitely is something, another sacrifice that I have made. It's definitely something that I miss, but I know that, you know, $400-$500 on a plane trip, on a plane ticket, excuse me, and even more on a hotel room or on an Airbnb or what have you, that's money that I can't put towards Mocha Millennium if I'm spending in it. So just really things like that, the same sacrifices that I made when I was working full time are the same sacrifices that I make now.
A lot of Black millennials, if I can just be specific right now, are probably thinking to themselves, hey, you know what, I want to start a company, and, you know, because, you know, I potentially want to be financially free and have free time to do other things that I might not be able to do during my 9-to-5. But I've spoken to a lot of founders, and, you know, this doesn't seem like it's the case. It sounds like people work more hours. They actually make a lot more sacrifices. They make less money at the start. As a female Black founder, solo founder, and CEO, you know, what is your day like? You know, if you could just walk me through a typical day.
Yeah. So first, the idea that you'll have more time and, you know, more money, even, I think at least more money in the beginning, that's definitely a huge misconception. I work way more hours than I've ever worked. And as far as the money that we bring in, it goes right back into Mocha Millennial. And so it was funny earlier, I'm in a text group with two of my best friends that I travel with often, or that I used to travel with often. And there is a deal for a flight to Sydney, Australia. And the old Brittany, a couple years ago, when I wasn't building a company, I would have booked that flight deal like right then and there. But this morning, I'm like, yeah, no, I can't go. And so the idea that you just have, well, I guess if you, as you're bringing in revenue, you will have money and things like that, depending on how much revenue that you're bringing in. But it just depends on how you decide to like use that money. And so for me, I know that in order for Mocha Millennial is what is, you know, it's, since I'm building Mocha Millennial, it's my full-time job. It'll be, you know, it wouldn't be a smart idea for me to take the money that I'm making and deposit all of it into like me and, you know, in my account. And so everything has to go back into Mocha Millennial. But as far as, you know, my day to day. And so how can I explain this? I wake up pretty, not super, super early, like some founders that you'll see, you know, or you read about. I normally wake up anywhere between like 5:30 to like 6:30. And some people, they may say that it is still pretty early, but I've read stories of founders that wake up at 4 a.m. And so typically I'll wake up around that time. I really like to go to cycling class. And so if the instructor that I really like is teaching that day, I'll go to that, or I'll try to work. Or if I don't do that, I'll try to like go to the gym still and work out. I haven't been as good as I need to be, so I don't do that every day. But on days, if I wake up with a good you know, with a good head, with in a good headspace, I'll try to go like work off, and so that I can kind of like clear my head even more. So yeah, I normally wake up between like 5:30 and 6:30 every morning, and then from there I'll check emails. I normally go through and scan emails. It's the same kind of habit that I had back when I was working at my 9-to-5, and so I scan through emails to see, you know, what's most important to respond to like at that moment. And so I have my emails organized. I have my inbox organized by folders. And so my team has a folder. Anybody that we've partnered with has a folder and things like that. And so normally I look at my team folder like first, because, you know, the way I look at it, these people, they are helping me build a really great company. And so if they need something, I need to talk to them first. I don't want to hold them back on what they're doing. And so I'll go to my team folder, answer any pending emails. And then also next from there, I'll like skim through the other inboxes and see like, is there anything that I can respond to like immediately? If not, I kind of postpone it. And then I go strictly onto Mogul Millennial just to make sure that all the articles that we had scheduled to be published today look right. You know, like the photo isn't off or anything like that. And just make sure that the site is still working fine. I'll go and peek at our analytics to see how we're doing so far. And then from there, I'll go back. If I don't have any calls or anything like that, I'll go back and then I'll take like an hour or so and respond to emails. I normally don't spend no more than like an hour and a half on emails, just because, you know, like I can't spend all day answering emails. One thing that I do is it's a habit that I started at my old company, is that like sometimes people email you, they typically ask like the same things. And so I have like, you know, email verbiage that depend on like who emailed me that I could easily send to. So if there's someone that wants to write for Mogul Millennial, we have a normal response that makes it easy where I can just copy and paste and post it. If there's someone that wants to talk about what it means to partner with Mogul Millennial in regards to like maybe like a newsletter ad or an article as an ad, because we don't do any like ads, like any blatant ads on the website. I have a normal verbiage that I can send to that. And so for me, a really good time hack and a time saver for responding to a lot of emails has been having that email verbiage that I can just copy and paste and quickly modify as needed. But yeah, so from there, from answering emails, I meet with different team members throughout the week. And so I'll meet with them and talk about and kind of just like follow up on what they're working on. And then from there, I'm back and I'm just like pretty much like looking at ways where we can just grow our reach and looking at different companies that I can like that I can pitch our company to for partnerships. So that way we can continue to grow and bring in revenue.
So one thing that is definitely well known now is that, you know, there's a lot of stress involved with startups, especially if you're a solo founder in your case, but you have a great team, which is absolutely fantastic. But there is a lot of stress. There's a lot of emotional toil that happens throughout this process. How have you been able to manage all that? You know, how do you keep yourself in check with regards to wellness? And how do you make sure your health doesn't take a hit? I know a lot of founders might ignore this side of things and just kind of run themselves to the ground, you know, but how have you been able to just stay up and, you know, keep your health and wellness in check?
I know a lot of people may hear this a lot and it probably sounds really cliche, but honestly, it works. So I mentioned earlier, I try to work out in the mornings. If for some reason, if I didn't get a workout in, so if I'm not in a great headspace, let's say I woke up feeling like really moody and really crappy and I just want to just get right to work. I don't want to like really just get out and go to the gym. I do try to get a workout in. And so if my schedule allows, I'll work out at the end of the day. It's been a long time since I went like weeks without working out. And so every week, whether that's twice a week or three times a week, I do find time to work out. And so I have found that helps, because it's a great stress reliever overall. And then too, when you look good, you feel good. That's cliche as well, but honestly, I do think there's a lot of truth to that. And then the other thing, you know, being from the South, typically like you don't, and then too, like growing up in the type of family that I grew up in, eating healthy wasn't a normal way of life. But, you know, over time I've learned how to like instill great eating habits in my day to day. And so on Sundays, I still may go to grandma's house and have some soul food, but I don't eat like that at all, like every day. Like not at all. Like, I don't think my stomach can even handle that type of food on a daily basis. And so, I'm really intentional with like what I put inside of myself. And I also, because I'm really budget, you know, I'm really budget conscious right now, I cook almost all of my meals. And then I make sure, like, I'm a firm believer that you need something green with every meal. Like, you need like a vegetable, and preferably like I have to have something leafy green every single day. And so I make sure that I incorporate foods like that, and it keeps me healthy. It keeps me, it also gives you good energy. I don't know if you've ever tried to like work out after eating fast food. You won't have a good workout.
But no, I don't eat fast food at all, but yes, I know what you mean.
Yeah. And so I'm really intentional on like being healthy. And or even like today, for example, I've been feeling like weird this past weekend, and at the start of the week I was feeling really weird. And so I randomly decided like last night or last evening per se, around 6 p.m. that I'm gonna do a juice cleanse tomorrow. I love to juice. I have my own juicer at home. And so I went to Sprouts, which is like a local, pretty popular, like healthy grocery store that has like really great produce. And I bought enough fruits and vegetables, and I juiced last night enough for the day. So I'm hungry right now, I'm not gonna lie. But I've been I'll be lying if I told you I wasn't hungry. But I've been drinking my juice, and I have it labeled, and I got my permanent marker, and I marked what time I should drink it. So I've been drinking my juice, my water, and my tea. And so again, just to sum it up, I'm really big on like eating healthy by all means. I'm not someone, again, that like doesn't have a slice of pizza or anything like that, or I will go and have soul food on Sundays if my grandma cooks or my mom cooks, but for the most part I eat very healthy. And then I'm also really into essential oils, and so I have several diffusers throughout my house. One diffuser, I actually have two diffusers in my room, but there's one right by my nightstand. And so every single night, and even throughout the day, I keep certain type of oil blends flowing throughout my space, and I think that helps as well.
So the first thing there's two things I would say is I'm a big juicer as well. And my question is, you know, what's your favorite juice? Like, what's your favorite cocktail?
Cocktail or juice?
Well, I would say juice. When I say cocktail, oh, okay. I mean like a blend.
I do love a good cocktail.
I don't drink at all. So like for me, cocktails are out of the question. But you know, when I say cocktail, I mean like a mix of different, you know, fruits and vegetables that you put together, you know.
Yeah.
So what's the Brittany Hunter power sauce like?
Oh yeah. So my sister is gonna like probably cringe when she hears this. She hates when I make this. But I love beets.
Oh yeah.
My jam.
I was hoping you would say that, you know.
Yeah. Beets are my jam, but like the thing that I really love like even more, and I cook with it and I'll put in my juices and my smoothies, is ginger. I actually overuse ginger. Like, oh, whenever God. I'm like doing stuff for like family or friends, if they come over and they're like, does this have ginger? And so how much? Like, you know, when the recipe says 1 inch, I may put 3 inches of ginger. Like, I love ginger. And so my new favorite blend that I've been doing is beets, ginger, and a little bit of fresh pineapple, and then kale and cucumber. It's so good. It's so good. And of course you got to go heavy on the ginger.
You know, it's, and I'm not trying to play into, you know, I do the same, but ask anybody that has ever tasted my juices. They're just like, man, this is way too much ginger. I can't get enough of it. FYI. Essential oils are definitely my thing as well. But you spoke about, you know, being level-headed, making sure you exercise, making sure your diet is good, which is definitely something that all founders, or I think anybody who's human being, should be doing, actually. But a huge part of a startup success is ensuring that you have not just a good team, which you do have, but also that you have advisors and mentors. At this point, do you have advisors and mentors? And if you do, you know, how did you find them and how did you get them on board?
Yeah, so that's definitely something that I am interested in. I have been trying to find the people that I guess you can consider them an advisor if they're not like an official advisor. I have several friends that are in the startup space. So whether they're like CTOs of their company or they've been able to raise several rounds for their companies, I am connected with a few different founders that have had that experience. And so I kind of consider them as like advisors and mentors, even though we're around the same age, you know? And so I typically go to them whenever I'm having issues or whenever I need advice or I just need to vent, or when I was trying to get into different accelerators and talk to different VCs. You know, they were the ones who I talked to practice my pitch or to look over my pitch deck and let me know, like, okay, what changed this or what does this mean? Or, you know, they really gave me great feedback. And so yeah, I would say that a few of my friends that have their own companies have been really great advisors for me, but I am looking for some actual advisors, you know, that I can that I'll put on my deck as an advisor, or that I'll tell VCs about, like, I have, you know, this person advising me and this is their background.
So one thing I would say is that you definitely sound like you know exactly what the vision is. You have a team behind you. You have some peer advisors or mentors, but there's still a lot of learning to do, right? You know, you still have to grow as a CEO. You still have to grow as a founder. There's a lot that you know right now, but there's a lot that you don't know as well. You know, how to grow a company, how to get it sustainable. How are you filling up that learning curve, right? You know, is it something that are you self-studying? Are you enrolled in any official institutional programs? You know, how are you doing that? How are you staying up to date?
So several things. So number one, I learned a lot about what's going on in the space that I'm in, or different topics that I'm interested in that I feel like they can help me grow. I have Google Alerts set to my phone on a variety of topics. And so I'm constantly reading articles that are sent through Google Alerts. And then also there's different podcasts I listen to that I feel like that helps me grow, and different books that I may consume more than once that can help me grow. And so in particular, I have been spending more of my time on the podcast route. And some of the podcasts that I've been like really obsessed with, Y Combinator, they have a really great podcast that I feel like is good, because it's one thing about Y Combinator's podcast, it's more so like action packed. It tells you, like, they even in like the stories or when they're like featuring someone, you really get a sense of like, okay, well, this is how I can take what they did and apply it to my company. And so I highly recommend Y Combinator's podcast for anybody that's building a company. And then there's a podcast that was created by the founders of Gimlet Media called Startup. And if you haven't heard of Gimlet Media, Google them. They are really, really, really an impressive like media startup. So the founder, the person that originally founded Gimlet Media, he started the podcast called Startup. And essentially he was documenting, he was documenting his experience as a new startup founder. And so in the podcast, you can hear everything from him actually pitching to different investors to how he kind of pitched who soon came to be his co-founder. And it's just really insightful. And I've learned a lot from listening to his podcast. And then last but not least, I kind of listen to this more as just for leisure, but I feel like sometimes I can still learn things. It's the How I Built This Podcast. It's a great podcast. It's really popular. But, you know, I feel like as far as when I sometimes need like really actionable tips, then I'll go to the Y Combinator's podcast. The How I Built This Podcast for me is more so I just want like good energy and, you know, and positive reinforcement of being in the startup space around me. And so, but that's also like one of my favorite podcasts though still.
So definitely continual learning is a big part of the process then.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I know every founder that I've spoken to recently, quite a few of them, always have one crazy founder story of, you know, some wild period of time in their startup life. Do you have one of those for us?
I'm sure I do. I'm sure I do.
You know, crazy time, you know, setting up with regards to, you know, the technical side of things, you know, getting writers, you know, something that was just a time that you would always remember as a pivotal point in building your startup up until this point.
Yeah. Gosh, I don't know why my mind is blank. I know I definitely have experienced some pretty strange things along the way. I think one of the things that pop up now in my mind is when I first decided to get team members onto the team. And so one of the things that I did, So I created an application. I just used like Typeform to create like a little survey. Mm-hmm. Sent it out, posted it, people filled it out. And I remember like this one particular person that applied. I learned a lot from that experience with this one particular person. So in the beginning, I would, you know, once the person applied and I would look over the application, I would set up the call, set up our call for me to learn more about them. And I would send them my phone number. So that way we could like actually talk, because I wanted to talk to the person before they started writing, just to kind of get a better feel of their reason for wanting to contribute and just, you know, more about them and their background.
Right.
And needless to say, that one of the things that I learned from that experience is to, number one, to not give your number out until you actually know the person and you can trust them. And like on social media, like you can like type in my name and put in, you know, Brittany Hunter's Instagram, Brittany Hunter's Twitter. All of my profiles are public. I don't mind like keeping my profiles public, because I feel like if something happens, I can easily block, you know. But I feel like, you know, why not have my pages public? I don't mind. It's not anything that bothers me. But however, during that situation, I remember, so we, you know, I emailed him and he, you know, wanted to like, of course, talk to me more about Mocha Millennial. And so the first thing that happened when we got on the call, it was more so he wanted me to feature him on Mocha Millennial. And I'm not opposed to featuring people that write for Mocha Millennial. We've done it plenty of times. I mentioned before, some of my writers, they have their own startups and we've featured them before. Like, for example, Mike Yates, he's building a startup that's geared towards high school students and their learning. And I thought it was amazing what he built. And so we feature him and his co-founders. And so there's nothing wrong with that. But I'm really big on like not wasting time. And so that was a sign from the beginning, is that we hopped on the call and immediately the focus turned from, oh, well, I want to feature. And I'm like, that's not what you said. Well, you know, this, we could have done it, but that's not the way that you go about it. And so I explained like, okay, well, this is what the process looks like. I need for you to send more information about your company so I can kind of know how questions prepare. This is not an interview. Like he thought it was going to be like a whole interview about his company for the feature. And so after we got through that, and, you know, got through that red flag and things like that, you know, I told him more about the process, learned more about him. And he did seem like a really great person to have on Mocha Millennial. Well, around that same time, I was also still working full time. And so I was having these interviews on my lunch break, before work, after work, in between me going to meetings for work. And so I was fitting in, you know, calls with potential writers and potential team members as much as possible. And so, you know, I'm really big on follow-up. And so I made it a point to follow up with every person they interview at least every few days so they can know whether they were going to be a writer or not. But this person, when I tell you, he called me and texted me several times a day, every day. It got to a point to where he was actually like literally stalking me. He started following me on all social networks, sending DMs. And I think it was like a Tuesday or Wednesday, but because of my work schedule and all the different interviews that I had, I knew that I wasn't going to get to everybody until that following Saturday. So from that day up until like really until Friday, he like literally called and texted and DM'd me all day. Even when I responded and said, I'm still doing interviews, I'll be getting back with everybody soon. It was a lot of that. And so I will say that like, I know I definitely had like other moments that's been crazy, but that was definitely something crazy that I went through. The text messages went from being like nice to like just give me a yes or no, like really demanding and forceful type of weird questions that like just totally kind of freaked me out a little. And so from there, I don't give my number out until I know someone and I've had a time to vet them. So moving forward, like all of our, all the interviews I do with any team member is always done through a conference call number. And I remember when I first had that experience, one of my close friends was like, well, why do you do a conference call number in the beginning? And I'm like, well, I don't know. I just want to talk to, you know, who thinks that someone is going to start stalking you after that?
Right.
And so it was really strange. Like when I'm not exaggerating, when I tell you I was getting DMs and text messages and calls literally all day. All day.
So I'm guessing he's not a writer for Mocha Millennial right now.
No. It was too much. He was stressing me out. And I told you the first red flag was when
he started talking about his company, saying that this was his interview. And I'm like, well, no, I don't even know who you are. It's not an interview, sir.
Oh, man. Okay, so just to switch gears a little bit. So anyway, founders out there, be careful with your phone numbers if you're in a media company, because you might get stalked. So talking about, you know, the racial wealth gap for a second, it's obviously a big issue. And startups are an equalizer in the sense that they can provide, you know, they can provide founders and founders that start companies with the opportunity to create a lot of wealth in one lifetime, right? And be able to do a lot of things in their communities and things like that. Mm-hmm. Why do you think that it's important for other potential, you know, professionals out there who are looking to make that leap? You know, why do you think it's important for them to actually take that step? What would you advise them, you know, to do?
On taking the step, you kind of went out a little bit, but taking the step into what again?
Into starting their own companies.
Like my advice for them?
Yes.
I think number one, save your money. I feel like there's definitely, you know, I saved a good amount of money and it's still been able to sustain me. And I definitely have some runway left, but you know, I think that I definitely could save more money. And so I would say save as much as you can. And then before you start also, I'm a big believer on like really like knowing your business and knowing your revenue driver. And so do as much research as you can on your business and then start bringing in revenue like before you quit your job. And so I think that would be my biggest piece of advice is to save, know your market, do your research, and then bring in money before quitting. So that way you can know if your main revenue driver is actually sustainable or not, or, you know, and just to ensure that it's not like a temporary revenue driver.
One of the things as well that I've experienced is how much, you know, the startup world is based on relationships. And having good relationships with you know, with different people, whether it's investors, with other founders, with industry professionals in your specific vertical. How have you been able to actually grow your network when once you step into the founder space? Because, you know, you have your company right now, you know, you're working long hours. How have you been able to step away from that and actually grow your network in this process as well?
So when I first became a full-time founder, I was really big on going to an event. I don't go to as many events as I do now just because I just want to make sure that my time is being used wisely. But I do try to go to some events for sure, a few a month. But when I first quit my job, I was literally going to something like 2-3 times a week. I don't do that as much now. But I go to different events and I'm not afraid to talk to people. And so I'll go and talk to them and just, you know, I'm always pitching myself. I'm always pitching Mocha Millennial. Events has been a good way. But again, I like to really stress to different founders to know that like every networking event is not for you. So, you know, and just because it's the best one or just because it costs money doesn't mean it's the best one. Like really look to see if this is going to be a beneficial event for you or not. And then make time or use your funds to go. So yeah, events has been really helpful for me. And then I'm a huge fan of LinkedIn, as you already know. And so LinkedIn has helped me been able to connect with different founders or different people that are in our target market. And so LinkedIn has been really helpful. And then thirdly, even though I have different writers on the team, there are some articles that like I may write myself. So there are certain feature articles that I'll still do. And writing those feature articles and connecting with different founders has definitely helped me grow my network, because if I'm the one that's interviewing them, then I'm able to like learn more about them. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes after the interview, they'll ask more about Mocha Millennial and about who I am. And so being, you know, doing those feature articles has helped me connect with other people. And then, one last thing, speaking of writing, I do from time to time, I'll still freelance for other websites. Like I'll freelance for exonicole.com, which is a pretty popular website for minority women. And then I'll also freelance for Her Agenda, which is a career site for women. And so freelancing on those websites is actually brought traffic back to Mocha Millennial, because some people, I know that they'll like see who the article is by, and I always include Mocha Millennial and in my byline. So writing and freelancing for those websites every other month or so has helped me connect with more people as well.
Right. So looking at your LinkedIn profile as well, you actually have another company that you run, LinkedIn Mogul. What do you do at LinkedIn Mogul, actually?
Yeah. So for the past few years, I've always had people reach out to me, whether they were like people on LinkedIn or on a different social network or friends or coworkers that would ask me different things about, like, number one, how I've been able to grow my following, or, you know, I'm very like outspoken in regards to like how I've had different recruiters reach out to me. And so I've had people reach out to me like in regards to how I'm able to do that. Or they may like compliment the way that my profile looks and ask questions on like, well, how can I get my profile to look not necessarily the same, but really talk about like who I am as a professional. And so for the past few years, that's something that I would just like literally just talk about for free, because it wasn't a huge portion of my time. But most recently, what I have been getting is more people that are wanting more in-depth conversations about their profiles and on how to grow their influence. And so I realized, well, you know, there's something that I can monetize, right? And so now I only take on a few clients every single month, but I'll like work with different professionals or entrepreneurs on like how to create an ideal profile. And so for some of those clients, they may just need like a, you know, just someone to help talk them through it. And so I'll just like consult them, like review their profile and give them some tips. And then they go in and make the changes, or they go in and create their own profile. And then for some others, you know, they not only want that feedback, but they want you to actually do it as well. And so I work with different people on creating their ideal profile. And so it's something that I do. Like I said, I take on a few clients a month. I look at like, okay, well, how busy is my month? How much can I fit in? And I absolutely love LinkedIn. And so it's really fun to do. And so number one, I feel like it's like my side hustle with Mogul Millennial. And so it helps me like have that hobby and something that also brings in money. But then number two, the money that I make from LinkedIn Mogul, guess where it goes back to? It goes right to Mogul Millennial. Yeah.
So even as a founder, right, you still got to have that side hustle. There's a possibility that, you know, you might have to do that as well.
Yeah. But no, it's a lot of fun, though. It's something that I truly love doing, because I've gotten different opportunities from LinkedIn. Like, the majority of my team found us on LinkedIn. Like, one of the questions that I ask whenever I interview someone to be a writer or to do any other aspect of Mogul Millennial, I'll ask how they found out about us. And like 98% of the time, it's through LinkedIn. Some of the people that we may have to partner with, they found us through LinkedIn, or I found them through LinkedIn. Gosh, what else? Like, it's LinkedIn has like truly been such a huge, you know, a huge help in our business and just me as a professional.
So on LinkedIn, you're actually a LinkedIn top voice, right? You know, I've seen that a couple of times. Personally, I don't know what that means. I'm assuming that someone who has like a big following on LinkedIn. But what exactly is a LinkedIn top voice? Is a LinkedIn top voice?
It's not the following at all. And so what LinkedIn Top Voice is, so every year, the team over LinkedIn, they'll look at, you know, all the hundreds of thousands of active users on the profile. And so I want to say they have like a little, like less than 500,000 active users on the profile, on their platform. It's way more people that have actual registered accounts, but who's actually using it every day or using it, period. That number is smaller than that. But yeah, they'll look at all of their hundreds of thousands of active users, and they look at a variety of things. And so in order to be a LinkedIn top voice, a lot of people think you have to have a lot of followers or a lot of connections, or you have to have all these blog posts. But that's absolutely not true. It's more so they look at people and the way, or how can I say it? They look at people and the type of content that they post and the impact on that content. And so whether you're writing blog posts or you are writing short or long form, like captions per se, or updates, I think it's called updates on LinkedIn. They look at that. And so, you know, if I write a cap or a post or an update right now, I don't even say how many likes, but the type of likes is what matters. When I say type of likes, are people liking your posts that are completely outside of like what you're talking about, or outside of like what your area of expertise or business is or your profession is? you know, they look at those type of things, and then also, like, you know, the comments. And so how much are people engaging with your content?
So startups are hard, and, you know, it's definitely a challenge going through this phase, especially at the beginning. You know, how do you stay positive, and what can you tell other people who are starting out? You know, what advice can you give them to be positive in this early stages?
Yeah, so I've been this way for a while. I'm a big believer and, you know, in making choices that, how can I explain this? I'm really a big believer on, like, you have the choice to dictate, like, you know, how your day goes and how you feel as a person. And so when it comes to, you know, being around people or things that I feel that are, like, negative or that I feel like who really just doesn't add value to my life, I choose not to be around them. And I'm okay with not answering the phone or ending, you know, a relationship with, you know, a friendship relationship if that's something that's needed to be done. And so I have, like, a really tight, small circle of friends that I really, you know, count on and things like that. But when it comes to, like, you know, being in spaces that don't serve me or connecting with new people that I feel like are, you know, won't bring any value or don't share, like, the same values as me, I don't engage. And then also, like, another thing with me when it comes to, like, people or things or just situations, period, you know, I feel like, you know, it's really important to, I hate this phrase, but to, like, box them in certain categories. And so I may have people that I may reach out and that may hang out and we have this in common, or we have, you know, thing A in common, and then another group we have thing B in common. But I'm really big on, like, segmenting and certain things in my life, or if needed, removing certain things in my life. And I think that, you know, at this point, I'm getting too old to deal with things that don't serve me.
Well, I think a millennial is not very old, so I'll just say that. But you know, I'm really excited about, you know, seeing your company grow. I'm probably, you know, one of the biggest fans. I probably read everything, and I definitely think that other Black millennials and non-Black millennials as well, I mean, should go over to Mogul Millennial and definitely be a part of this movement. You know, where can people get in touch with you? And what, you know, where can they find more information about what you're doing? And, you know, just stay up to date with Mogul Millennial.
Yeah, so definitely go into the website at mogulmillennial.com. They can follow Mogul Millennial on every social platform at Mogul Millennial. And then if you want to connect with me on every platform, you can find me at Brittany L. Hunter. And that's Brittany, B-R-I-T-T-A-N-I, the letter L, and then Hunter. And so on every platform, from LinkedIn to Instagram, you can find me there.
All right. Well, this has been fantastic. You know, wish you all the best for the rest of the year in 2020. And really excited to watch this company grow. So thank you for your time, Brittany.
Thank you, Adrian.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.